Welcome to Real Money Radio, the show that focuses on real people, real problems, and real solutions. Here's your host, certified financial planner, David Holland.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. Good to be with you, and I am excited to get into a topic with one of my returning guests, and as you know, if they return, if they come back, that means they're good. So on the line with me is Liz Skinner. She is an investment news reporter at Crane Communications, and she's featured investment news articles, investmentnews.com, a trusted source in the financial and investment community. I read it religiously and keep track of Liz's work, and she's written a couple articles here recently that are very interesting for you, the listener, for you, the everyday person out there listening to this program. She writes a lot for, of course, for financial advisors like me to know what's going on, but also a lot of the topics are, well, they're really relevant to everyday people and what you're doing, and you don't have to be a financial person to appreciate that. So let me welcome Liz. Will, Liz, hey there, how are you?
Hi, David. I'm great, thanks.
I'm glad to have you back. And for our listeners, Liz, you and I both are fighting a little bit of a sore throat. You're getting over it, and I think I'm going into it. So we'll help each other here.
Sounds good.
All right. Well, for my listeners, I want to introduce you, Liz, Bachelor of Arts in Political Communication from the George Washington University, Master's in Environmental Resource Policy from the same university, George Washington University. And you've been with investment news, doing the investment news reporting for Crane Communications for 4 years and freelance writing and editing for 8, and then Bloomberg News another 5. So that's a lot of writing, Liz.
I've been doing business writing pretty much since I graduated from undergrad.
Oh, wow. Okay, well, just when I think I've written a lot, I feel like I write a lot. There are people like you, Liz, that make me look like an amateur. So thanks for keeping me humble. I appreciate what you're doing. Let's, if you don't mind, Liz, I'd love to just dive right into our first topic, which is the emptiness. Forget the emptiness. Parents now fear the cost of a full one. That's the title of the article that Liz wrote. And I wanted to talk about this with you because the statistics, Liz, are both surprising, but also may be reassuring perhaps to some people who are experiencing this. And also, it also gives a shines a light on what's happening with our economy. So let's dig into this a little bit. So with what you wrote, there are a lot of folks in that 18 to 31 age category that are come back home. They're back in the old bedroom and they're living with mom and dad.
There are, I guess, the most recent estimate we have is about 22 million of these adults who are 18 to 31 are living back at home with their parents. And that represents about 36% of this age group. And that amount is really the highest level that we've ever seen in terms of data that we have on this, which is since 1968. So over those 40 years, the percentage is now 36, yeah, where it has been more like around the 31 to 32% level.
That's a pretty high number. That, you know, the 22 million didn't really get my attention because it wasn't really, you know, computing in my mind. But over a third in this age bracket, that's a lot. I remember when I came back from college and I also went to work and I came back to relocate. I spent very little time at home and it was brief and it was transitional. Now, I mean, good grief, that's a huge number. So here's the big question. What do we take from that? Is that indicative of ongoing challenges in the job market? Is that indicative of a shift or change in our culture where that's become much more accepted? Is it, you know, less about encouraging that younger person to be more independent? What's going on here?
I think the overriding issue is economics.
Hmm.
The recession had a debilitating effect on many people who were just graduating from college at that time, as well as, of course, impacted the job market, so that now it is a job market where it's very challenging for these younger individuals to get jobs right out of school. And at the same time, of course, college costs in the last decade have been skyrocketing, which has led to an increasing amount of student debt. So the students that graduate often have large amounts of debt, they can't find a job, and overall they don't have a lot of choices. So they are moving home, and parents are accepting them and pretty much allowing them to move in and supporting them in many ways. And the big problem with that is that in some cases, some of these pre-retirees whose kids are moving back, they are spending so much on taking care of their adult children that they're actually risking their own financial future.
Okay, well, that is a very scary proposition. So we're still feeling very substantially the effects of the downturn, the Great Recession, the greatest recession since the Depression. And the Depression, what are we, 80 years ago, Liz? So this is, for many, many, many people, this is the worst that they remember, unless they're in that very high age bracket. So this is still a profound impact. Is there any what's the cultural part of this? Is it become more accepted? You know, you've got the economic side, but is there also something going on culturally where this has become, you know, with a shifting change in the way we have the family structure? Is there stuff going on with that part of it as well?
Well, I think it becomes a legitimate excuse for parents who maybe always wanted to welcome their kids back, but the kids weren't interested in coming back.
Oh, okay.
So I think people are saying, you know, oh, you know, of course you can move back in. You know, the economics just don't support anything else. And, you know, that's not to say it's not okay for, as you mentioned, you know, maybe you move home for a short time while you're looking for a job. But when you look at the spending that they are spending on their adult children who move home, it's frankly, they're setting up a pretty nice lifestyle for them.
Yeah, not a lot of incentive to move back out. I mean, go ahead and just stay and take care of us in old age. Just don't ever even move out at all. Some of the statistics and some of the things that you commented about, Liz, really, I don't know, I guess I felt almost a little, it felt weird. It felt a little awkward that parents are paying for these children that have moved back in who don't have their own economic viability, to put it nicely, that they are paying for their cell phones and even some, you know, their entertainment, their college expenses. They're making payments on the college. They're paying for autos and insurance and health insurance, all these things.
Well, right. And all of these things are parts of life that as we grow up, we need to take responsibility for ourselves. And in addition to the cost of our housing. And most of the time, parents aren't charging their children anything when they move back in. So they're not paying rent, as well as they're getting their telephones and their cars and their health insurance and in some cases prescription drugs, all paid for by their parents, who in many cases are actually still paying back these same students' college loans.
So this is obviously eating into the, in a significant way, the discretionary spending that the parents may have, but you had alluded to earlier that this is also affecting the ability of the parents. And again, it may be a little hard for the parents to keep track of, or they choose not to, that this is impacting their savings for their own retirement.
Well, that's right. And there was a survey done recently by the LIMRA Secure Retirement Institute, and they estimated it's about 45% of Americans who have supported an adult child over the past year said that it has hurt their own retirement savings, which means that the thousands that they are spending but on their adult children is actually taking away from the amount that they are able to put in the bank that they planned to use during their own retirement years.
That's a big whack. I'm always an optimist, Liz, so help me with this. So where's the good, I mean, I you know, we don't want anybody out on the street, but where's, I guess this is helping with the economic recovery to some degree, that those monies, dollars are being spent and the kids are spending it. And that, I guess that's a good thing from a demand side of the equation. But where's the positive in this story?
Well, one thing that some advisors I spoke to said was that some of these parents really are enjoying some nice relationships with their children who moved back in, that they are spending, you know, time with them as adults, and they are really enjoying each other and developing a deep relationship. So frankly, if the parents and the children can work out the financial implications that this is having, the emotional benefits could be there.
Okay. Well, and that's not to be overlooked, and I don't want anybody to think we're callous here. I think that's very important. So I just thought of a new bumper sticker, Liz, that me and my kid are spending my kids' inheritance. That's what's going on. I mean, it's kind of bringing forward those financial resources that may end up going to the child, because the parent is spending it on the child. So it's a little bit of, I mean, when you really boil it down, it's a little bit of the timing of the cash flow that comes to the child. Is I can help you now, or I can leave more to you later. And to your point, what family doesn't want to see and use and enjoy those monies together, as opposed to leaving a chunk of money in a bank account when the parent has passed on?
Well, certainly there is that aspect of it. You know, it might be coming out of the child's future pocket. But then you just hope that that parent has saved enough already,
right,
for their own retirement, to live the way that they had always planned to live at a lifestyle that is, you know, at least to what they're accustomed to.
Because if not, this will end up reversing itself on the back end, that then the parent may then become, once the child does hopefully become economically independent, that they are then going to be returning the favor and they'll be taking the guest room in the house.
Well, exactly. And one of the other underlying problems is that by financially supporting these young adults, you're not really teaching them to take care of themselves and how to live in a lifestyle that they can sustain themselves, which is all part of, you know, those early years when we become an adult.
Critical stuff, important. And I think that this is something to focus on and for people to be thinking about. And if there's a way, I guess maybe the takeaway here, Liz, is if we were talking about one third of the audience out there or more, that the takeaway here is that there are long-term consequences, and families need to balance between the good and the not so good part of it, and maybe try to work toward at least the child becoming responsible for some parts of the expenses, and then ultimately pushing them back out the door again. Is that kind of the takeaway here, to take another shot at that economic independence?
Well, the advisors I spoke to said they often have discussions with their clients who are in this situation, and they try to tell their clients to bring up the issue of financial independence regularly. Check in with the child every couple of months and try to be working towards different goals, and slowly but surely kind of start having the child kicking in for mm-hmm. some of these expenses, so that eventually there would be a time frame where the child would be paying for most of their own upkeep, so to speak,
yeah,
and would be able to sustain it themselves when they need to.
Okay. Well, that's good advice. It makes sense. Liz Skinner, ladies and gentlemen, investment news reporter at Crane Communications. Investment news articles are over at investmentnews.com, an excellent resource. We're going to grab a quick break. We'll come back and talk about another article with Liz, the housing recovery. It's on the horizon, but it may be too late for many baby boomers starting their retirement. Stay right there. We'll be right back with Liz.
Retirement planning doesn't have to be hard, complicated, or stressful. It also doesn't have to be in a hurry or with sales pressure. Since starting Holland Financial in 1997, it has been David Holland's mission to help individuals and couples plan their futures with personalized financial planning. David puts himself in his clients' shoes and recommends products and services he would choose for himself or his family. To learn more about Holland Financial or to schedule a one-on-one consultation with David, call 671-PLAN or visit planstronger.com.
And we are back, ladies and gentlemen. Liz Skinner on the line with me, investment news reporter at Crane Communications. Investment news articles are found at investmentnews.com. And if I didn't say it before the break, an excellent resource. I know I did, but I'm saying it again. Very good stuff over there, and I'm glad to have Liz returning here after the break with me. Liz, I want to talk about the other subject of the housing recovery. It's on the horizon. The housing market, of course, has recovered from its bottom and continues, hopefully, to improve. We're seeing increases in the median home prices, and that's great, but there's a big but, or and, as they say. Don't say but, say and. And the issue for a lot of folks, especially baby boomers, who may need to tap the equity in their home, that it might be a little late for their retirement. What do you think? What do you think about that?
Well, some of the data that's coming out, and specifically the report that I wrote about, were the data regarding the median price of existing homes that were sold in September.
Okay.
And what this data was showing, that although prices were up from September in 2013, the pace of sale has been slower. And that has an impact if someone is trying to sell their home.
So with a slower pace, I'm going to kind of walk through the logic here. Tell me if I've got it right, Liz. Is a slower pace of sale or slowing sales, even if the prices are higher, fewer buyers, and maybe more difficult for them to unlock that equity of the home?
Well, exactly. If someone were planning their retirement based on the fact that they would sell their home at a certain price at a certain time, then the change in how long it takes them and really what they can get for it compared to maybe when they made the plan 10
yes.
years ago,
yes,
that is having an impact on baby boomers who are now ready to start their retirement and look at their homes and say, this asset just isn't going to produce what we thought it was.
Okay, so some of the solutions out there for folks who find themselves in that position is obviously, number one, if they can delay retirement, you know, past that original plan they had at some point in the past, then that would be probably a resounding, first place answer, because it's not only going to give the housing more time, but also allow them to accumulate more perhaps by working, and also shorten the period during which they're going to need to fund that retirement by however many more years they work. So that's option number one, right?
That's option number one for those who can do something like that. If you are not in a job that puts a lot of pressure on your physical body, that is more likely an option. But there are other things that baby boomers are looking at, and one of them is to rent out their home.
Okay.
Perhaps they have, a large home where they raise their children, and they don't really need that much space, so they rent the large home and rent out the large home, and then they go and they rent a smaller home for themselves, and there's a difference there that actually provides an income that supplements Social Security and any other investments that they have.
Now, that's very clever, Liz. I was thinking that you were going to say that they rent out part of their home or they rent out the spare bedroom, but that's actually pretty interesting. So go ahead and rent out that big home, and if you're in my market, Liz, in Florida, we got beautiful Daytona Beach, and we can rent out that big house and go get an economical condo on the beach or somewhere there. And so do like some of the financial companies do, make money on the spread between what you're renting for and what you're able to rent out your larger home for. That's very clever.
Exactly. It's an issue of, you have different needs now, and the rental market is still strong in many places. So you really can benefit by, you're holding on to your home, so it's still there as an asset. But it's almost like you're essentially getting rental income on it. As long as you are in a home now that is smaller and doesn't cost as much for you to rent.
Very good. I like that. And then other options for unlocking that equity that you've seen being done?
Well, the advisors I spoke to said oftentimes they will recommend a home equity loan that can be used to kind of provide some supplemental income. Or also, some are increasingly looking towards reverse mortgages, which is something that has often gotten kind of a negative implication and certainly isn't for everyone. But the advisors I spoke to said it can be the right move for some.
I think that's a great point, Liz. I think that's interesting. And I have actually seen an uptick in people asking me about reverse mortgages. And I have a thought, or I guess maybe it's an opinion. Reverse mortgages, I've been aware of them for probably 15 or more years, or 12 years, something like that. But they got kind of a negative flavor because there wasn't the tightest of regulation on them when they first were introduced. There were certainly rules, government rules or federal guidelines, but there was a lot of there was a lot of expense, and there was a lot of it just wasn't as tight as it is now. And with all of the regulatory overlay with Dodd-Frank and the CFPB, Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, all of these things have really tightened up the regulation and how reverse mortgages are done. And the cost look to have come down significantly. So I think now probably is the time, if somebody is in that position, that might be something to look at, especially with the rates where they are as well. People can lock in. I did recently some research on this, and we're seeing rates in the 5% range for a fixed rate, which I think would be smart if we go into a rising interest rate environment and want to avoid maybe that variable rate hurting them down the road.
Well, I agree with you. Since 2010, the reverse mortgages have all been federally funded, and they allow borrowers to access their housing asset without having to move out of their homes. So it's really a unique kind of proposition that makes sense for some. Of course, you know, the payments aren't due until the homes are sold.
And, but it's not free. there is a cost, and you're exactly right, Liz. Those interest costs, instead of having to pay them, of course they accumulate, and it is tax free cash that you get out of the home. But so is any other loan. So I think the takeaway for our listeners is it could be a choice. You need to be. It's not for everyone, and it's something that you need to consult with somebody who knows what they're doing to advise on that.
Well, and we spoke earlier about the impact that these decisions have on your children or your heirs. And of course, with a reverse mortgage, the children who inherit a home that has this reverse mortgage do so gaining a liability
on
it.
Right. Yeah, and they've got a couple choices just for our, since we're on the topic, Liz. They could, as you know, they could accept the liability, go ahead and refinance it or sell the home. They don't have to pay that loan off immediately. They've got some time if they want to sell it or decide what they want to do, and then, you know, remit the mortgage due amount to the lender and then keep the difference. Or if it is underwater, you know, we're hoping that the housing market holds and continues to improve, but if we were to see a sharp decline in housing at some point in the future and the mortgage then exceeds the value of the home, the beneficiaries can simply let that home go to the lender.
Well, exactly. That's so. One of the strategies that we're seeing, as well as there's another one that some advisors told me about, and this is something that I had never heard of, but using a strategy where you sell your home to your children over a period of time while you're still alive, that is something that some couples are finding can help provide an additional monthly income that allows them to, you know, keep their home. And so under this type of an arrangement, the children would pay a monthly sum to their parents for the rest of their lives.
Okay.
And then at the parents' death, the balance of the house would be gifted to the children.
Okay. Now, that strategy, is that the Qualified Personal Residence Trust, the QPERT?
The advisors I spoke to didn't specify the different vehicles that they've used to do that. That's the overall idea
of a couple different ways of doing it.
You know, pass on that asset.
All right, I'd heard that being a strategy that's used. Let's grab a quick break. We'll come right back with Liz Skinner, Crane Communications, investment news reporter, right back after the break.
These are challenging times for investors. The stock market is volatile, with 10% drops a common historical occurrence. Is your portfolio prepared for such a correction? How about inflation? What's your plan for when a gallon of gas or gallon of milk costs $16? And what about interest rates? Did you know that a 10-year bond could drop 10% if interest rates rose just 1%? What's your plan for that? Holland Financial has answers to questions just like these and practical steps you can take to help mitigate these negative events. Call 671-PLAN or visit planstronger.com to schedule your one-on-one meeting with David Holland. Do you have financial questions you'd like answered on this show? Send them to questions@planstronger.com. You will remain anonymous.
And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. Liz Skinner on the line with me, investment news reporter at Crane Communications and investmentnews.com, an excellent resource for keeping track of what's happening in the investment world. And of course, advisors like me will take advantage of those resources. So you might find interesting information on the website. Liz, I wanted to come back, and we've got a couple minutes left. Just hit a few more thoughts about the home as a financial tool. We talked about a couple of options, renting and making money on the spread, using the reverse mortgage as a possibility, kids buying the home from the parents. Any other strategies you've seen out there that families are using? I suppose they also could refinance the home and pull out some equity, and or maybe refinance and get a lower payment to unlock some equity and unlock some cash flow on a monthly basis.
Well, certainly taking out some type of a home equity loan is something that some advisors say is the right move for some seniors who, you know, maybe they haven't tapped that in the past. So they have a lot of equity in their home, and they can take out some of it to provide that income stream or that supplement to Social Security and the other investments that they have in their later years.
And to come full circle, start charging rent to the 18 to 31-year-old that's in your house.
Well, certainly that is the kind of thing that it could benefit everyone. It would provide some type of additional income for the parents, as well as it would probably be a pretty good lesson for the adult children sleeping back in their old bedrooms that they grew up in.
I agree with that. We can take some of the cartoon characters off the wall and update it. But there's another part of this, just real quick, Liz, and that is with some of these financing options. Big thing to consider is we are at the bottom of the interest rate cycle, and interest rates are not likely to go down any further and are going to be the same, if not higher. So as people think about some of these different options for any type of equity access or any type of financing, that they keep in mind that they need to weigh that. We mentioned the home equity line of credit. Generally, it's a lot of them are tied to prime. And as rates start to move up, that prime rate's going to go up. So this is something to keep in mind.
Well, certainly. And because interest rates are so low is one of the reasons that advisors really are giving the reverse mortgages kind of a second look. And in fact, some of the data shows that the total reverse mortgages in the United States in 2013 was up for the first time since 2009.
Yeah, close to 60,000, I believe, were done in 2013.
Right.
All right, Liz, very good. Well, thank you for being with us. Liz Skinner, ladies and gentlemen, investment news reporter at Crane Communications, investmentnews.com. Liz, we'll have you back. You're a great guest.
Sounds great. Thank you very much, David.
Today's edition of Real Money Radio has been brought to you by Holland Financial, conveniently located on Granada Boulevard in Ormond Beach. Could you benefit from a one-on-one confidential conversation with David Holland, or would you like a second opinion to make sure that you're on the right track? Call Holland Financial at 671-PLAN or visit us at planstronger.com to schedule your no-obligation consultation. David looks forward to discussing the financial issues that matter most to you. The host of Real Money Radio, David Holland, is a certified financial planner with over 20 years of experience. And because David provides advice to clients on a daily basis, his hyperactive compliance department wants us to tell you that David Holland is an investment advisor representative of Holland Advisory Services, a registered investment advisory firm. He offers insurance and annuity products through Holland Insurance Services. Commentary given during this radio program should not be considered investment, insurance, tax, or legal advice. Views expressed concerning specific securities are not an offer to buy or sell. Investment advice and planning services can only be given after an analysis of an individual situation and only where Holland Advisory Services is registered or exempt from registering. Real Money Radio is produced by Holland Productions.